SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Number two of the early line right here on Sports Grid. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wright, side of the NFL. As I said, it demands our attention. It really, really does. A report from Dan Graziano of ESPN that the most likely outcome for both Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo is for them to be cut by their respective teams. We will take this piece by piece. And the piece that we will begin with, you better believe, is Jimmy Garoppolo. The world's biggest I told you so. Let me be kind. We told you so, because at no point did DRS and I disagree on this. They tried to tell you, people that maybe work closely with Dan Graziano, that Jimmy Garoppolo was worth a first-round pick. Then they told you he needed shoulder surgery and it wasn't going to make a difference. And here we are, middle June, no callers, no suitors, no takers. Cut Jimmy G. It is inevitability. It is truthfully, though, Donnie, what the Niners get as they've continually messed this up in each and every way. But maybe they didn't mess this up. Maybe this, again, was inevitable because Jimmy Garoppolo is not good. He is not an even average quarterback. He is below average. His salary is too much. He is easily cuttable. And why people would be moving heaven and earth and meet a ridiculous first-round pick asking price for Jimmy G is complete and utter nonsense. We are getting close, Donnie, to what we told everybody was going to happen.
Yes, and it doesn't seem like the 49ers are in a rush to do anything, and quite frankly, they shouldn't be, because there's only one outcome that's going to happen. He's probably going to get cut here, so you wait to the very last moment, and you say, okay, if somebody gets injured, maybe he moves on at this point, but I do see the reports out here that if he were to be loose, the Seahawks would be really in on him. This has the feeling to me, like, but I think, like, if we take a look and say, all right, 49ers practice. You got John Lynch, who's way back up in, like, the crane with the film guy with the binoculars on going, ooh, I think we need to hold on Jimmy for another week here. Okay, we'll hold him to another week. He's watching Trey Lance again the following week at OTAs. Ooh, maybe another week here. I hope things turn out, because you're not – let me tell you something. The preface that I'm trying to make right here in the story I'm trying to tell is this. If you started day one of the offseason and you said to yourself, like, my goodness, I got lightning in a barrel right now with Trey Lance. He is going to be an absolute superstar. So, Jimmy, rehab, stay away. We'll try to, you know, work something out, but you will never be back with this football team. We're going to cut you because this guy is way better than you are right now. Is there any, like, buyer's remorse? Is there any reason that Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't moved on? Because quite frankly, there was probably a market, Kevin, right when the season ended, where you could have probably moved Jimmy Garoppolo for a late pick. What, fourth, fifth, sixth rounder? Somebody would have taken off your hands before they and all the NFL teams settled on exactly the direction that they were going to go quarterback. Let's just say the Commanders, right, before they got Carson Wentz. Maybe if they called around, and, hey, Jimmy's worth a one. Yeah, we'll move on from that. What can we get Wentz for? I don't know, a third-round pick. Good deal. Maybe you could have gotten Jimmy Garoppolo for a third or a fourth-round pick to go to the Commanders, but you played hardball, figuring you could get so much more at this point here. But quite frankly, we're all seeing everything being laid out in front of us and has been for a few months. Jimmy Garoppolo is your average quarterback. He's not worth his weight in gold like some were going to tell us. And also, I still can't get back to Jimmy Garoppolo on the podium and go, yeah, you know what? I'm probably not going to be here. Just trade me to a contender. Like, I'm that missing piece at 30 years old. Didn't you see my record? Don't you see my record? I can get us to the Super Bowl. I have played in Super Bowls. Everybody's around the league going, yeah, they got to the Super Bowl actually in spite of you, Jimmy Garoppolo.
Radio audiences live here on a Monday morning. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wright side, talking about some NFL headlines. And don't worry, we've left enough time to get to every aspect of this story here. Now, the Baker Mayfield, do we go to the landing spot? We'll do the Baker Mayfield side of this, okay? The report is that Baker will be cut as well. But there was an additional report that actually is a solo I told you so, but this one coming straight from Donnie. This notion, not that I disagreed, but it wasn't certain of it. But it's now basically being confirmed. Baker Mayfield can very easily force his own release if he just shows up to minicamp or training camp and makes things uncomfortable. So the question is Baker Mayfield going to do that? Should he do that? Does he actually maybe not want to be cut? What is your read that basically they've confirmed what you've said? Baker shows up, the Browns are going to have to let him loose.
Yeah, and I don't know what's taking so long at this point here, because you don't even have to show up, Kevin, and put on your uniform. You just have to show up. Maybe use the weight room. Maybe, you know, look at some off-season film. Just him in the building is a distraction to the rest of the football team. And not even being disrespectful, like, as I said, coming in and going into the lunchroom and, you know, throwing a ham sandwich at Deshaun Watson saying, "This is my team. You took my team away from me." That's not going to happen here. But as long as he shows up at the building, that's going to be a distraction. And the Cleveland Browns, trust me, Kevin, they're not waiting on, oh, my goodness, if Deshaun Watson gets suspended, Baker, come back and lead us. He's never playing another snap there. So if you're Baker Mayfield walking in there going, "Hey, just give me my release. Let me restart my career somewhere else sooner than later."
The only thing that I know it sounds so ridiculous. I know it does. But it does appear that there's a very, very small chance that Watson plays the beginning, if any, of this upcoming season. Maybe there's some desire to reconnect and let Baker still be the quarterback for this team. We've heard some rumored ideal landing spots and some really interesting talking points from top wide receivers. All next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So as we're talking about Baker and Jimmy Garoppolo, the additional piece of reporting that we have not been able to get to yet is, and by the way, they've also confirmed, while the expectation is they'll be released, it's become very clear, and we've said this here on the show, both teams seem to be sitting out and waiting on a potential injury that could really then up the ante for their quarterbacks that they still have in-house. So while it does seem to be the likely outcome, they're going to probably continue to wait a good while, at least as long as they probably can. With that being said, the indication is that it is most likely going to be Seattle for Baker and Carolina for Jimmy, or at least those are the landing spots that they think make the most sense. That's where those two guys are linked. Seattle and Baker makes a lot of sense, especially with Pete Carroll still thinking that they can compete. Metcalf, Lockett, all of a sudden I think you'd be interested in a Seattle Seahawks team and maybe what they could bring to the table for the 2022 NFL season. Garoppolo and Carolina, your guess is as good as mine. Matt Rhule, that's who you're going to go down swinging with. Then again, the other option is Sam Darnold. Did you have strong takeaways when you saw those landing spots kind of matched up for each quarterback?
Yeah, I think it makes sense, Baker in Seattle, because you still have a guy that, when healthy, talking about Baker Mayfield, he's a playmaker. Now, he's going to make some stupid decisions. Yes, he is. But if you're a DK Metcalf, those are the guys that you like, where you line up in the huddle and it's like, "Hey, I know you're going to get double teamed. I don't care. Run this route. I'm throwing you the football no matter what." That's Baker Mayfield here. Whereas maybe Jimmy Garoppolo is like, "Hey, you got a guy over there. Let me check it down to the running back or the tight end over the middle." So from an explosivity standpoint here, I do think the Seattle Seahawks make sense for Baker Mayfield. But also let's keep in mind too, both of these quarterbacks are competent NFL quarterbacks. As much as we like to slander Jimmy Garoppolo, if you have him as like a backup and you need to win a football game and him coming off the bench, he's a better option than just about, 75, 80, 90% of the backup options out here. So we do have some fun slandering these guys, but they are competent NFL guys. But just from what we hear is what we see with our eyes, we can certainly tell the difference between the two. But I think you're right. I think Baker Mayfield, if you're going to Carolina, it doesn't really excite you as like a jump start for your career. But I do think if you're Baker Mayfield and you're looking to start over, where are you going to go? Okay, I got Drew Lock, I got Geno Smith. I can beat those guys out. And I can actually showcase my talents with some big-time wide receivers and a dominant draft. Hey, this reminds me a lot of the Cleveland Browns. At least you can get an offensive line together in Seattle. But a ground game that you can work off of play action with a deep threat wideout like DK Metcalf, I think it works out. If I go Baker, I'm wanting to go to Seattle.
Yeah, I actually think there's a really big gap there, unless there's, like, I don't know, some connection to Christian McCaffrey, right? When you talk about those landing spots here. There's a couple of other aspects in the NFL I wanted to get to that I definitely think are worth our time discussing here. Let's start with the tangier of the two. Tyreek Hill, I don't know. Maybe Donnie, I think he's losing his mind here a little bit, to be honest with you. Like one of those situations where somehow I'm going to come around full circle that the Kansas City Chiefs were right to basically allow Tyreek Hill to find a new landing spot here. He has a podcast now, Tyreek Hill. And he has a co-host who asks him to compare the quarterbacks. He couldn't lie about the arm strength because, I mean, obviously, Tua can't even throw him the ball all the way downfield. You can thank Miami's social media team for posting that. But he did say that he would take Tua for an accuracy perspective. And then they basically said that Tyreek Hill was underutilized in Kansas City so they could hold down his contract asking price. Listen, I'll expand. I think this is crazy. I think this is absolutely crazy from Tyreek Hill. Maybe, though, you saw this and you went, psh, finally somebody said it. I actually can't even believe that this is the discussion point right now, but here we are.
Yes, and it sounds like something that you would get on an opposite picks type of, forecast here. It's like, yeah, Tua Tagovailoa is way better than Patrick Mahomes at this point. But if you look overall, I understand what he's trying to do. You go to a new football team, you get the big contract, you get a young quarterback that you're trying to hype up. Yeah, similarities between Patrick Mahomes, but the fact of the matter, you don't have to go to the next level. Just because you showed up in front of Andy Reid and the GM of the Kansas City Chiefs, and they didn't give you what you want, it doesn't mean that everything was for naught for what you did in Kansas City. And the simple fact of the matter is, Andy Reid, as much as his struggles are sometimes in the biggest games, he is one of the best offensive coordinators and play callers the NFL has ever seen. So you're telling me that Tyreek Hill was underutilized. I don't know. When I watch every Chiefs game, he was running wide open all over the place and getting deep shots after deep shots. I mean, he had 1,200 yards last year, 111 catches. Before that, 1,300 yards. Two seasons before when he was healthy, 1,500 yards. And some of those seasons, 15 touchdowns and 12 touchdowns. I can't believe that he would come out and say he was underutilized. What did he want? The football every single play? It's not as if he's like a Megatron where you can just say, okay, post up and I'm going to get you the football because you're so big and strong in the red zone. You have to be creative to try to get ways to get the football to Tyreek Hill. And Andy Reid did a sensational job. Now, Patrick Mahomes, I think we can probably agree, arm talent-wise, maybe the best we've ever seen in the NFL. So it's pretty hard for a guy that you're not known for a big arm in Tua Tagovailoa going from a cannon in Patrick Mahomes. But I do like what he's doing here. Hype up the young quarterback. I'm underutilized. I'm going to dominate out here. Now, they do have an innovative head coach down there in Miami now with McDaniel, but we'll see if that continues into the regular season, how they use him. But quite frankly, off the top of this, it's kind of fun. I got a chuckle when I saw Tyreek Hill saying, better quarterback down here in Miami, and oh yeah, they'll use me correctly. My goodness, if he wasn't used correct in Kansas City, I can't wait to see what Miami does.
Yeah, but so this is the thing, right? If the story was he says he'd take Tua for accuracy, I wouldn't have put it in the show. It'd been a waste of time. Because you know what you're, right? I love my guy right here, right? I love my guy here. To then basically be like, yeah, they didn't want to pay me, so they weren't giving me the football. He finished third in catches and seventh in yards. What? It's one of the most insane things I've ever heard in my entire life, I think. Don, he had double-digit targets in both the Buffalo game and the Cincinnati game in the playoffs. Does he hate Travis Kelce? Does he? I mean, what am I watching here? It's as if they were basically saying instead of getting 50-yard touchdown passes thrown to him, he just wanted to get screens thrown to him constantly. And then what, figure it out himself? I mean, it is insane. To be this entire thing, Donnie, has made me low on the Miami Dolphins. I think they're going to be terrible. This is one of the craziest things I've ever seen. Because Donnie, here's the thing, right? Tyreek Hill, man, this is going to be a bridge too far. This feels a little AB-esque to me. And the thing is, right, when you're winning like they do every single year in Kansas City, it's fine. Let this team, Donnie, start 1-3, and Tyreek Hill might throw a football at Tua Tagovailoa if he underthrows him again. This is bad.
Yep, week six.
If I'm Miami, I'm like, you can't be serious.
Week 16's out there with the fur coat on. Hey, why aren't you playing this weekend? Ah, my knee flared up on me during the week. No, it didn't. You're right. You threw a football at the head of your head coach, Mike McDaniel, at this point. But I think you hit the nail on the head. It does sort of feel like I finally got let loose with a big contract from a franchise that I'm coming in now as the big dog, as opposed to this franchise made me the big dog. It feels a little AB-ish by like week four, week five, where he's starting the YouTube videos, TikToks, and quoting at halftime, signing on to Twitter. This could get interesting here down there, and I'm all here for it. Because I think the Miami Dolphins might have a decent season underway, but at the same time, we don't know what Tyreek Hill's going to give us on the field and off it.
Like first drop back of the game, he goes to Jalen Waddle. Tyreek Hill throws his helmet on the sideline.
Yeah.
What is he going to call the plays? It's just, Donnie, if you could, I know we're coming against the break. Isn't Mahomes and Tyreek Hill like the most perfect pairing of all time in the history of quarterback and wide receiver?
Yep.
The craziest thing I've ever seen.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We still have a game. We have an NBA Finals game to preview. We got to get to this Major League Baseball board. There's definitely still a lot to be excited about on this baseball board. And I think you've got a really great matchup to start us off here with the Phillies and the Marlins. Aaron Nola against Sandy Alcantara, Sandy Alcantara is actually the NL Cy Young favorite right now. Or is it Alcantara, Alcantara? I can never tell. I always try and...
Alcantara, you got it. You got it.
Alcantara, I'm all over it. I'm all over it then. Beautiful.
You've been on
Alcantara, a 1.61 ERA, but Aaron Nola at home maintains the status as a favorite. 7.5 for a total. Justify when you look at these pitchers. What's the expectation today?
Yeah, expectations probably runs might be a little bit harder to come by than you typically would think. Now, yesterday, I did hit a live over with the Philadelphia Phillies scoring one run yesterday because the Arizona Diamondbacks absolutely pounded the baseball all nine innings. But if you take a look at Nola, his xFIP minus on the season this year, Kevin, a 74. If we take a look at Alcantara, an 89. And look at that ERA, 1.61. Now, granted, Sierra number is what you want to take a look at also with the defense included. The best pitcher today, Kevin, if we line it up, 2.75 there with an Aaron Nola. So sensational stuff out of the gate. If we're looking at the hitting matchups and how they match up here, as we said, Nola's got a wonderful xFIP here, dominating lefties and righties. But you do have some pretty good guys in the lineup that match up with Aaron Nola, talking from a Marlins perspective. Chisholm at a 352, Soler 208, Aguiar 192, Sanchez at a 272, and Astudillo at a 300. All the ISO power numbers, which are elevated here. If you look at the Phillies starting lineup, as we anticipate in their 1-9 today against right-handed pitch, Schwarber 318 ISO power number, Hoskins 187, Harper 336, and Odubel Herrera 267. Not a great lineup here to go up against Alcantara. So I'll lean towards the under at 7.5 here. And maybe if you're focused on the early innings as opposed to later innings, because we do know the Phillies bullpen, which has been actually very good, really imploded yesterday, much more of what you anticipated from them. So maybe a first five get in, get out type of game, because once you bring the bullpens in, you're really betting this game, Kevin, what? On the starting pitching between Alcantara and also Nola, you don't really want the bullpens to mess that up.
It does make sense. I'll tell you one guy that's worth your attention, though, if you wanted to try to back some level of offense. It's -105 against Alcantara. It's for a reason. Two plus bases, Bryce Harper. Look, he's got good numbers throughout his career against him. 9 hits and 25 at-bats, 3 of those doubles and a home run. That's good for a .360 batting average. Bryce Harper's on fire. I got to say, I think Bryce Harper is actually, and you wouldn't think this, I think he might be one of the most underrated players in Major League Baseball. And what are you talking about? This guy won an NL MVP. People kind of, like, I sometimes think they associate Bryce with being an overrated, overhyped prospect. And that's just nonsensical. A .316 batting average, top 10 in home runs, top 7 in RBIs on the season, 5th best OPS in Major League Baseball, following up an MVP season in impressive fashion. Bryce Harper, really just a special player. We talk about wanting to see Trout get to the postseason, Ohtani want to get to the postseason. I want to see Bryce Harper get to the postseason there with that Phillies ball club, if possible. They're going to obviously have to win games like they have today, where they have their ace in Aaron Nola on the mound. How about the Braves and the Nationals also set to do business here? Atlanta, by the way, 11-game win streak, a series against the Nats coming up, a good chance that they could extend that even further. Ian Anderson gets the ball, 9.5 total. They're favored on the road, Atlanta. How do you see these two matchups playing out?
Yeah, two not great pitchers here on the mound today, but the question is going to come up here, how those Atlanta bats are going to go up against Gray. Because we take a look at Gray, a 110 xFIP number on the season, xFIP minus number on the season, 4.33 ERA, 4.41 as an xFIP number. So not disastrous, but not that great. But here's the issue that's going to be challenging. Because Gray, if we look at that higher xFIP number, you figure that he's probably getting blasted at one side of the plate, and it's true, it is. Left-handed batters are really getting the best of him, Kevin. A weighted on base percentage of .411 and an ISO power number of .344. So you say, man, sign me up. But if we take a look at the Atlanta Braves, who are having a plate renaissance here over the past 3 weeks with their winning streak, and rightfully so. Acuña, Swanson, Riley, Olsen, Albies, Ozuna, Contreras, Duval, Harris. Sounds like a pretty good lineup, and it is. But take a look at this, though. As we said, Gray, right-handed pitcher dominated by lefties. If we look at the lefties in the lineup tonight, Olsen, Albies, and Harris, and quite frankly, Harris, an .061 ISO power number and a weighted on base percentage of .271 doesn't really stack up. So it's one of those leap of faith where you say they should be able to touch up Gray, even if the matchups don't make all that much sense, where you don't have that perfect, you know, let's get 5 left-handed batters in there to really take advantage of this. If we flip the card here and look at Anderson for the Braves, he's not much better than Gray on the season. Higher xFIP numbers, but he's actually getting torched as a right-handed pitcher from the right-hand side. A .364 weighted on base percentage. Now, again, not a great lineup here for the Washington Nationals overall, whether you take a look at this in the last 30 days or just even in the first half of this season. It hasn't been all that well. One of those games where you would look for more runs than not, because quite frankly, Ian Anderson or Gray having great performances side by side probably isn't going to happen. Now, I know you got that heavy favorite there on the side of the, you know, Braves at a -144 price with Ian Anderson on the road. Doesn't make that much sense. Hard to back the Nationals, but they're coming a little bit out of their shell. Maybe more runs than not, but a 9.5 means, Kevin, what do you need? 10 runs to cash a ticket. I'd still lean towards the over here.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mentioned the Josiah Gray strikeout prop is interesting. It's coming up against no one strikes out more than the Atlanta Braves. I'd be looking actually towards that under 6.5, but it's right now sitting at over -150. I don't like to climb the ladder too much when you talk about those big juicy prices there. It's not far off, but look, again, 10 cents can make the difference there. It's going to be one that I'll have my eye on throughout the day and see if the juice cooperates. Orioles Blue Jays coming up here. As you've got Alek Manoah, we talk about Cy Young candidates already. On the AL side, Alek Manoah is no doubt about it, one of them. A 1.81 ERA and a 7-1 overall record. That's how you end up with a team that is around a -300 favorite in a baseball game. 8.5 for a total. Man, and that is as expensive as a run line as you will see as well. Early -150, currently rounded closer to a -140. But, boy, the Blue Jays expected to do their to handle business here against Baltimore, certainly.
They are expected to do that, but let's take a look here on the pitchers here. Minimum of 20 innings here in 2022, their xFIP minus numbers. How about this? Alek Manoah with a 94, which is good, but Bradish with a 99, not too far behind here. And if we take a look at one of those guys that maybe isn't getting helped out all that much or maybe a little bit unlucky, because you see the ERA, Kevin, at a 6.45 from Bradish. But how about his xFIP? a 3.96 and a CR number of 3.97. So maybe he's due for some better pitching performances than he's been getting. But quite frankly, the matchup that we're all going to take a look at here is the right-handed bats against Bradish. Because if we take a look, he's a right-handed pitcher. And in 2022, 95 batters he's faced from the right side, 471 weighted on base percentage, ISO 358. And we know how they come to play. Not very many lefties in that lineup. And quite frankly, you typically see, you know, a team that tries to maneuver in and out and say, let me get at least 3 to 4 lefties in the lineup against a right-handed batter. Tonight, we're looking at one, and that's Kevin Biggio in the 9-hole. Everybody else is right-side hitters. So if we take a look and say, what makes the most sense? Do you trust that high ERA, or do you trust that lower xFIP number where he's just getting a little bit unlucky? And maybe in Toronto, which now is a much better hitter's ballpark, apparently, than Camden Yards is, they should be able to break out at the plate here for the Toronto Blue Jays. I wouldn't stand in their way tonight, because if you're looking at just pitcher and pitcher and who's the better overall arm talent, obviously it's Manoah. Who's the better lineup? It's Toronto. But again, Kevin, it's not a minus 110 price here. You got to pay substantially here to get the Toronto Blue Jays. But they should hit even if those numbers are a little bit closer on some of those analytics between the two pitchers than not.
Which is, again, always jarring when the advanced numbers kind of add that additional perspective. But no, again, a 1.81 ERA, Bradish is 6.45. I'll just kind of, again, I like the different numbers you can use to put this into perspective. The run line, okay, in the first five innings is 1.5.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like, oh, it's a really expensive minus 160. No, you need to be up by 2 runs. Otherwise, it's curtains for you in the first five. So you really see how that matches up. There were 2 more games. What do you rather, Astros, Rangers, or Twins, Mariners?
It doesn't matter. I guess we can go Astros and the Rangers at this point. If we look at this one, Kevin, Hearn, the lefty on the mound, sometimes you just those circle pitchers where you sort of get excited for it. It's like, okay, good. This is a guy that you want to try to get after. Because when you have a lefty pitcher on the mound and he's got a weighted on base percentage of lefties of 327 and the righties at 358, that's nice because typically lefties will shut down lefties, but that's not the case here for Taylor Hearn. If we also look at his xFIP minus, isn't that bad? There's a lot of really good pitchers with 20 innings or more with their xFIP minus numbers, you know, in check, so to speak. So 113, not disastrous, but a little bit higher than you would like, a 5.40. XFIP number and a 460 Sierra price. So obviously it always comes down to, you know, one of those teams where you set up, what do we say, even like a month and a half ago, only team you really want to look at is the Houston Astros. Well, they look extremely good again against left-handed pitching. Altuve, 378 ISO power number. Alvarez, 179. Gurriel, 167. Tucker, 177. Pena, 220. McCormick, 220. So you do have some hitters in the lineup. Houston should be able to get after tonight. Let me just check some of the updated price that we're looking. Minus 166 on the road. Javier's not a great pitcher, but this is a lineup for the Houston Astros. That should eat pretty well against Hearn tonight. If you look at Javier on the other mound, average pitcher. But again, you're still waiting for that Texas lineup to really wake up the way it's supposed to hit. They just haven't done it yet. But a ton of lefties in the lineup tonight. Maybe an over in this game. Maybe an over is the play here between the two.
The Astros team total is a 5 at plus 102, meaning maybe a 4.5 comes available throughout the day. Hearn has seen the Astros twice. First go around, 5 innings, 5 hits, 4 earned. Second go around, 4 2/3, 6 hits, 4 earned. Now, it's never a guarantee, but, you know, sports are not Groundhog Day. But if they're basically going to get 4 off him in the first 5, you like your chances to go up the ladder. That actually, both games, though, they finished with 5 on the nose. So, again, that 4.5, it could be the difference between winning and pushing. All right, let's do it. Game number 5, the NBA Finals. Warriors Celtics is next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Warriors and the Boston Celtics match up here in Golden State, a 4-point favorite for the Warriors, minus 168 on that money line, and that is where we begin. Who is going to take this game down? And you don't ever want to touch that stove too many times and be burned with the same assumption points, but I don't know, the stove doesn't look too hot. I think the Celtics win this game. I think Jason Tatum is special. as much as I slander Tatum, and he deserves every single bit of it, I'm the only one who is going to treat him like the player people claim he is, I think he is due for a special game. And I know you might say, well, doesn't it have to come in Boston? No, it doesn't. The greatest game of Tatum's career came in Milwaukee. 46 points, toe-for-toe, game six, kept their season afloat and went up against Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee. Tatum is due for a massive game. This team has won on the road all postseason long, and they have yet to lose back-to-back games during this postseason here. And dang it, again, it almost feels like when this is the year Tom Brady's bad. This is the year Tom Brady's bad. It's how it feels like talking about Steph Curry during this series specifically, but maybe he has a lower game at home. And even if he doesn't, right? I'm not talking, he scored 15, it was terrible. He scored 20. If Steph scores 27, it appears that might be enough for the Celtics to win comfortably. They are the better basketball team. I feel confident that I was correct when I laid that out as we set this series up. I think Tatum has the chance to be the best player on the floor tonight. And if he is, they will win this game. I'm taking the points. I think it's the Celtics for me tonight. Donnie, how do you see it?
I think I'm on the same page as you, because I think the angle for this game always has been for the series. Tatum doesn't have to go nuts. Like, if Tatum scores 24 points, you'd say, oh, you know what? They probably have a legitimate chance to win this game. If Brown scores 21 points, I think they have a legitimate chance to win. Or Marcus Smart scores 11 points. Okay, what did the other players do? But it's one of those games where in series where you say to yourself, Steph, what did Steph do, Donnie? Steph scored 24. I don't know about that one, because we still don't have it on our edge that Klay Thompson could show up and be game six Klay, which is only in game five tonight, where he can lead, take the lead, right? 7 3-point shots made, 30 plus points, unconscious in the first half, gets that big lead. You could coast into victory. But again, are we doubting that? Like, is it just my rose colored glasses right now, where I'm so jaded from the past game where I said, there's no way Steph's going to be 100%. So therefore he can't have a monster game. He was 100% and he did have a monster game. So now you're going back home in Golden State, where, quite frankly, you're supposed to shoot better. And when I talk about so many times, you climb that ladder, you ride that heat check. Is anybody going into this game going, well, I think Steph's only going to make 2 3-pointers or 3 3-pointers, or maybe Steph only shoots 7 times from the 3-point line? It just feels like he is going to be on that super heat check tonight, which is a thing I would worry about. Because if we look at his points prop total here, Kevin, a 30.5 now. So 31 points to cash it. Am I doubting Steph Curry that he can't get to it? But I think the prognosis on this game is correct from our angle. If Steph goes nuts, yes, the Warriors have a great chance to win. But if Steph just provides that 29-point game, as we like to say, there's no guarantees that they won that here. And we are waiting for an eruption from Jason Tatum. So on the outset, forget about looking at totals, points, props, anything. I do like the Celtics getting the points tonight as well with you, Kevin.
And again, they have really done enough to suggest you should be confident in their ability on the road. You might say, yeah. But Golden State hadn't lost a game at home until game number one. That was true in Miami. I leaned on that with Miami, and it did not matter, as the Heat only were able to protect their home court once in that series against the Boston Celtics. It seems to me the most important Celtics trend is the fact that nobody has been able to beat them 2 games in a row. Now, I know that that same thing is true of the Warriors. Well, it turns out that maybe the difference in this series is who won the first game in the series. Let's talk about the total, and then we'll get to these player props tonight. 212 here. If I remember correctly, we both felt under for game number four. Yes. I know I did, but I believe you lined it up similarly. I'm back to less conviction on the total. That's kind of been my rotation point here with this. Is there's a couple of games I'm like, hand up. I'm not seeing the total well. My initial thought is actually over, because I would think the Celtics offense should be able to bounce back from an underwhelming sub-100-point performance. But again, it's not a ton of early conviction from me. You've been more under this series. Seemingly, it feels like each and every game. Is that the case once again here?
I think so, Kevin, because also as you move on, sometimes you try to feel each other out, games 1, 2, 3, and 4, but now you know they're both evened up at 2-2. It's a best of three. And I get back to that point where it's not game 7, I understand, but every possession matters, where maybe you don't push it as much as you should have. Maybe you don't go for it on a 3-on-2, or maybe you don't back it out for a 3-point shot when it's a 2-on-1. You might want to take that foul and get to the free throw line. So I lean more towards an under. Now, also, you're talking about that price point here of 212. Let's see where that goes today, because quite frankly, the MO this year has really been 212s in the 212.5s, 213s, somewhere in that range. But I have the same feeling. The question is, do you think, Kevin, both of these teams can score 100 or more? If they can, it's going to be a total. Like, I don't think you see this game being 107, like 103, right, and staying under. If they both get into the 100s, they're going to do that. But at the same time, I do still think one of these teams tonight will be under 100 points, and that's why I would lean on the under 212.
Again, if that does happen, if one of them is under 100, it's going to be really hard.
Yep.
I mean, Golden State, right, in game number 4 went at exactly 100 and 116 from Boston. So it's manageable. That maybe is why I lean towards the under. You have to keep a team under 100 probably to cash that ticket, which is a difficult ask. When we line up the props, I think it's pretty clear we both like Tatum overs for tonight's game. Steph is, to me, kind of entered that range of how many times can you be burned. I was fortunate enough yesterday on Betting Above the Rim, as we were breaking down game number 5, that 5.5 on Steph threes, we were able to talk about it. It was minus 113 under. Steph going out there and making 6 threes every single game is a really, really difficult asking price. Then again, who now wants to lay almost minus 140 juice on anything that involves a Steph Curry under? Here's a number that I like, though. And interestingly enough, there was a Clay under that I liked in game 4. You liked an over. We were both correct. I think you under Clay points again at 19.5. If you look through Clay Thompson during this postseason, outside of the Denver series, he's not really paired together 3 consecutive solid games. I understand that they're going back home. I do. But I don't really trust Clay and his legs to go out there and, for what would really be, again, a third game in a row, provide the Warriors the needed boost. It's, again, a part of the reason I like Boston tonight. I think you go under Clay Thompson's 19.5 points.
Yeah, it should be. It's interesting you say that, too, because he did have 4 3-point shots in that last game, which probably means he was a catalyst for a high number, and he didn't have a high number. So I guess if you're looking to attack Clay, which I was right on the over 3.5 at a plus 100, maybe just attack his 3-point shots, because it seems like that's the way he's scoring, not getting a lot to the free throw line. If we flip it over here and try to take a look at some other options here in this game, if we keep it with Golden State, Jordan Poole, no longer do we see, Kevin, those 16.5s, 15.5s, 14.5s. At the FanDuel Sportsbook for Jordan Poole, we're down to 12.5 tonight at a minus 102 price, which leads me to believe that maybe we can get an 11.5 out here by game time. If you take a look at Jordan Poole, you know, 10 points, 14 points, 16, 9, 17, 10, 14. He's right around that number. And you know me, I love to take players who are secondary options at home. Maybe one of those performances coming off the bench for Jordan Poole that makes some sense, because you're buying him low right now. You don't need that 20-point performance. You don't need that pool party where it's like, hey, I'm every bit as good as Steph Curry when Steph Curry doesn't play. Obviously, we know Curry's going to be taking up a lot of the limelight, but he's also playing consistent minutes here in the series. 25, 22, 25, 21 minutes. And also, look at the shot selection here. 13, 8, 14, 7. So he is shooting from the field at a decent rate here. And as long as his 3-point shots are going down, I think it makes some sense. So maybe Jordan Poole over 12.5 as a secondary option, as we are looking at secondary options like Klay Thompson.
Yeah, I think that could actually line up. As I said, that feels almost like, hey, Jordan Poole scored 20. That's probably a Golden State win. That's probably a Golden State Warriors victory. Are you more interested in Marcus Smart or Jaylen Brown? I'm interested in Smart. Now, in game 2, he was horrendous, 2 points. But game 1, 18, 4, and 5. Game 3, 24, 5, and 7. Game 4, 18, 5, and 4. I think Marcus Smart, whether you go over points, which is 14.5, or points, rebounds, or assists, which is 24.5, is absolutely noteworthy here. And one of the things that we've talked about this all season long, volume. Last 2 games, 17 shots and 18 shots, but a lot of Marcus Smart volume right now for the Boston Celtics and their offense. I think the points, rebounds, and assists all could jump off of the page.
Yeah, and I like where you're going with Marcus Smart and also the correlation where we talked about Klay Thompson, three-point shots, how many points he scores. Let's just look, forget about any other series. Let's just look at this series with Marcus Smart from three-point range and his points correlation. Game one here, Kevin, 4 of 7 from three-point range, 18 points. Game number two, 0 of 3 from three-point range, 2 points. Game three, 3 of 7 for 24 points. And then also in the previous game, 3 of 9 with 18 points. So if we look at his 3-point player prop here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, Kevin, what do we find? Marcus Smart over 2.5, a plus 110 price. So if I look at his points prop here, in order for him to get it, it looks like he needs to make 3-point shots. So you can actually take some plus money down here to go over the 2.5 here, which means he makes 3, which quite frankly, he's made 3 times. When he's made at least 1 3-point shot in the series, 3 out of these 4 games, he's hit that 3-point marker here. So maybe that's a different way to go where maybe you can seize some plus money here for us.
That's very, very solid. That's very, very solid there. Let me, you know, talk about plus money. These popular parlays always jump out. I thought this was one of the more interesting props, though. I don't remember seeing these. Jason Tatum to score 12-plus points in any quarter is plus 115. They have a Steph option, which is pretty interesting as well, which is him to score 15-plus in any quarter, which is plus 270. Again, we talk about Tatum scored 12-plus in that opening quarter against the Golden State Warriors in Game 4. If I think Tatum's going to have a big night, it's probably going to have a pretty big quarter. I didn't think that was terrible, DRS. You're live the entire game, right? With something like that, a plus 115. Tatum 12-plus points in any quarter. Someone who also thinks Tatum plays well. Does that feel worth it?
It does feel worth it. It does, because you figure your guy's going to be having to light it up tonight. Also in those, you know, plus money markets there, when you take a look at the odds boost here, Steph to get 6 every single quarter is a plus 450 price. So there are some interesting options. Also, when we always talk about Kevin, we like the combined points props out here. And if you look at the popular parlays market, if you think Tatum and Brown have a good night tonight, where if you think the Celtics are going to win, it probably means both of those guys did well. 60 or more points combined is at a plus 280 price. I would like it to be a little bit lower there, but those are all the props that you have fun with, where one guy can really carry you, and you can still cheer on the other guy. Say, hey, give me a couple points here so you can get over those totals.
I tell you, you know, the full, you know, Tatum and Steph, 90-plus points, rebounds, and assists, plus 175. I mean, if you get 50-plus from Steph as a wild night, obviously you're in some pole position. I actually think it's a good point. That popular parlays market tonight, You trust a couple of these stars, you could really, really find yourself crossing the finish line here. Again, as we send it off, there is one boost available right now. Steph to score 6-plus points in each quarter, plus 450. Any interest?
Let's go with a yes. Plus money.
Why not? Yeah, it's a huge plus price.
Money.
Like, what's the most important quarter? The second, probably. 6 points
probably
is not bad,
yes,
though. Plus 450.
The rest.
It's a big payout, no doubt. Listen up, DRS will close out.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, last segment of the day here for a Monday right here on the early line. Donnie Wrightside and Kevin Walsh is always carrying you through 7 to 9 a.m. before we hand it over to Ben Stevens and the morning after right here on the grid. And yes, I'll be a part of the show over the first hour, so make sure you stay tuned to that. But having said that, we have an unbelievable sports night tonight. Good, nice little Major League Baseball card, as well as NBA Finals Game 5 live from San Francisco. But before we get to any of that here, I need to talk about golf. I need to take a look at the LIV Golf Tour as well as the PGA Tour. Listen up on this one. Listen up. Yes, you need to listen up. And why? Because the LIV Golf Tour is certainly listening up here on what the PGA Tour, particularly their upper management, is saying. Now, as we knew, these two tours were going to clash a little bit, no questions asked. And you're seeing some of the players, including this week, obviously with Phil Mickelson over there playing, Dustin Johnson, and also adding to the likes coming in the following, I guess, days, you could say, where they're going to play another golf tournament, where you have Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed, and Pat Perez now heading over to the LIV Golf Tour as it takes place here in the United States. But quite frankly, I do find an interesting tactic here by the PGA Tour and their upper management and their president and what they're saying at this point. And what is that? It's too much. That's what they're saying. Typically, when you know you have a better tour or a better product, somebody asks you a question. What do you think about the LIV Golf Tour? Hey, look, it's, you know, they're playing golf there. I don't know much about it, but we have the PGA Tour. I understand some players are playing in there. They will be suspended. But at the same time, this is the premier product. The PGA Tour is what every professional golfer, every golfer that wants to be a professional strives to play on our tour. But everything out of their mouths, like Rory McIlroy wins the tournament, the first thing out of his mouth is, yes, I have more wins now than Greg Norman, who is running, basically, the LIV Golf Tour. And also, you see, so many times where you're asking the president of the PGA what he thinks about the LIV Golf, well, you know, we got to defend it here, and we think we have a better tour, and, you know, what they're doing is, like, enough of it. PGA, if you think you're the better tour, stand on it. You don't see any of these things happen in any other sports here. If you have the inferior tour, let them be inferior. But you know what you got to stay tuned for here? Ben Stevens in the morning after.
Oh, yeah.